Health IQ. It's worth going to healthiq.com/TRN.
If you're looking for life insurance rates or you're wondering if you have the best rates currently, you need to go check out Health IQ.
It's great to compare. I have a life insurance policy that I got probably, 8, 9, 10 years ago. And I just signed a thing, did a physical, and they gave me the rate.
And you pay.
And it was based on a medical examination. Health IQ has realized that runners typically have lower risks than non-runners.
Absolutely.
And so you can go to Health IQ, and they will match you up with A-rated insurance companies at lower rates.
I think it's a brilliant business model. Go out there and find the segment of the population, the demographic that has the lowest risk of catastrophe, and bring them into your pool. It's just good stuff.
Go to healthiq.com/TRN. Hello, sir. How may I help you?
Scott, it's me. We don't have to keep role-playing.
Don, how's it going?
I'm not an actual customer, but we are in the TRN store.
Because of the cowbell. The aid station
bell. It's an aid station. We have really reworked this store. We have a new store manager, Scott, Jade Carter.
He's an ultra runner. He's a Canadian.
He
knows a little bit about computers.
Yes, he does. And so he's helped with this rebuild on the store. It's not live yet, but it's coming.
And once it's launched, it's going to be really cool. But until then, we still have all of the same stuff in the store. It's just the way that we're presenting the store. We're putting new paint on the walls. We're putting some decorations. We may even have one of Ann Trason's mini cougars on a shelf in the store.
She did mention that she may loan us that. Yeah,
a virtual loan. But it is gift giving season. If you're looking for things for stocking stuffers, we have pretty inexpensive. You can get us some PEK tattoos. You can get them a t-shirt. You can get them a PEK decal.
I want to talk about these Aftershocks headphones, Scott, the bone conduction, the one that sits right by the ear so you can still hear your environment.
I used them this morning. They were awesome.
So important for racing. So if there's somebody behind you or just trail running and you want to be courteous to those that may be behind you, or a mountain bike that might be ringing its bell, you can hear it when you're wearing these things.
I was just talking to a runner the other day, and she was saying that she only puts one headphone in her ear because she, is concerned about being approached from behind or being eaten by a grizzly.
A grizzly, Scott?
And they're wicked, crazy, awesome, cool. Because you would think it's kind of magic. These things sit in front of your ear, on your cheekbones, kind of. They don't bounce around, which you think they would do. They're very lightweight.
They're titanium, Scott.
They're titanium.
Yeah.
And it's as if you had earbuds in. It's that good of quality. But you still have your open ear, so you can hear, any kind of threat,
or you can listen
to the creek flowing, or the ocean crashing, or the wind blowing through the trees.
Have you done this? Have you put the ear plugs in and listened to them with all external noise eliminated? Oh, Scott.
Well, I have in one ear.
Sir, we'll be right with you. If you plug your ears when you're listening, you will realize and appreciate what the quality of sound that comes through. It's just amazing how rich and deep it sounds.
So go to the TRN store. You may hear a cowbell. You may not hear a cowbell.
It's an aid
station bell. And there's a link either on our partners page and in the store where you can link on over to Aftershocks and get a 15% discount. You got it.
Ladies and gentlemen of the wide, worldwide ultra-running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast.
The problem with the message above is that it flies in the face of what we know to be true.
We'll Candace, we are such idiots. you have no idea.
No, I've listened to your podcast for many years, and it's,
I do own my own bar. every Friday morning on I Run Far, we open up and open up the taps.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
And I'm Don Freeman.
And I'm Andy Jones Wilkins. Welcome to Trail Runner Nation.
You say that well.
Yeah, he does. He does it well.
Thanks. Today's topic is, we think, a really good one, but that's, of course, because we came up with it. we've been doing these podcasts for a while now, and from time to time, particularly as we're conversing with one another offline, we delve into some topics a little bit more deeply, and today's topic is one of those. We're going to talk about flow as it relates to trail running, as it relates to long distance running, as it relates to life. To put it a little bit into perspective, what we're going to talk about in relation to flow comes out of the work of a well-known sociologist out of Southern California named Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. And
we can't just stop there. You got to say, you said that rolled off your tongue, AJW. You've been practicing his name a lot.
Very impressive.
Say that again.
I can't spell it, but I can say it. And that is Professor Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi.
Wonderful. That's impressive.
Yeah.
and Mihaly, almost 20 years ago, published a seminal work called Flow, The Path to Optimal Experience. And since then has spoken globally on the topic and written a couple of follow-up pieces, studied such things as creativity and religion and people's purpose in life and the impact on this flow state on certain activities. Basically, his concept is that one enters into a flow state when you're fully absorbed in an activity, during which you lose sense of time, place, and are overcome with a feeling of satisfaction. He says every action, movement, and thought follows inevitably from the previous one, like playing jazz. And your whole being is involved. You're using your skills to the utmost. Csikszentmihalyi goes on to say that flow, quite simply, enables human beings to enter into a state of optimal experience. As we've thought about this in relation to ultra running and trail running, I think we've all realized that there are times when this happens to us out on the trail, and that's what we'd like to talk about today.
Hey, that's a great intro, AJW, and you said optimal experience, but I would like just to add one more word in there and see if you guys agree, but also optimal performance, because once you're there, you're really clicking on all cylinders, or firing on all cylinders, as they say.
You know, I would agree with that.
All right.
And I would propose that we add that if
yeah.
I have a question for you. Can you be in a state of flow and be suffering?
Ooh. Mm. Boy, that might be mid podcast.
You know,
stuff, Scott.
Actually, I'm going to ask Andy this. Andy, yeah. you mentioned in an article you wrote for I Run Far a year ago that you recounted in Western States 2005 where you went into the flow early of the Western States 100 and kept it for most of the race. Can you be in that state of flow and have peaks and valleys in your psychological and physical performance?
I think Csikszentmihalyi would probably say no, that I mean, at its most extreme, flow provides a feeling of ecstasy, of a high feeling, analogous to, for example, the runner's high with endorphins. And I think I think once you are there, you stay there. I think were you to get into a feeling, a valley per se, it's quite likely that you would lose that sense of flow. You would no longer be in that flow state.
Can the flow mask suffering?
Ah, God, that's a tricky one. I suppose, although it would do such an extraordinary job of it that it would be hard to call it both things, both flow and suffering.
I'll submit this as an idea. Then, if you're in flow, I think that you have this this bonk resistant shield around you, a psychological, you know, like when you're like Mario Brothers. Remember that game that you'd get the big mushroom and everything bounced off you. When you're in flow, you're kind of like Mario running with the superpowers. That's the last time I played a video game, guys. I'm sorry. I'm really not in, I'm not a gamer. So I mean, it was a quarter at the pizza parlors where I played that stuff. So
so maybe it can mask insignificant suffering, but when something really happens, that's when it kind of pulls you out of that flow and you have to deal with that and then try to get back in.
I would say that. I would say that some...
So if you have a pebble in your shoe, maybe it's not annoying enough when you're in that flow state.
It could mess your flow up, no doubt. And I think flow is a great word. I think of a river naturally that as you're in a canoe or a kayak and you're right in that sweet spot in that flow and the current's doing most of the work, That's what flow feels like to me when I'm running. When everything is going perfect, it's like, man, I am made for this. This is effortless. I could do this all day. And that is cool when it's happening in deeper miles because there's that great sense of satisfaction that, wow, I'm managing this right. I'm doing it right, just like I planned. And it's just glorious when you're in that sweet spot. AJW?
Yeah, I think it's important, too, to differentiate between flow and momentum. Because what you know, you could have, for example, an athlete on a hot streak, say a basketball player who's draining three pointer after three pointer, maybe in the flow, but is more likely just caught up in the momentum of the moment. Where I've seen flow, and I've talked about flow with long distance runners for years and years and years, but where I've seen it sort of at its most basic level. Is in two places. First, with like young kids engaged in play on the playground, whether it be athletic play or more likely play on a swing set or imaginary play in a sandbox or something like that. That absolutely, you enter, the bell rings and recess is over and you just can't get those kids out of it. The second place, and I mean, it would be great to, expand this to people who are involved heavily in art, is in art and music in particular. Csikszentmihalyi has some descriptions of Van Gogh, for example, engaged in the artistic process, or some famous jazz musicians engaged in their craft. And they just lose all sense of time and place and really reality and transcend to another level. And honestly, when that happens to us as runners, it's pure gold.
Yeah, that's what we sign up for. That's like when you're on a tee playing golf, and I don't play golf, so why am I even speaking like I know what I'm talking about?
Because you're spending all the time in the arcade.
At the pizza parlor. I don't even have a set of golf clubs, but I have experienced hitting a golf ball, and just magically it hits the sweet spot, goes far, goes long.
You don't even feel it.
You don't even feel it. That's just that place. So from what I understand, I'm going to try to say his name, Csikszentmihalyi.
Yep.
Very well done, Freeman.
Very good.
I'm in the flow.
You usually murder my first name when you say it.
I do.
That was good.
And so what they did, because I listened to the book. He has a book out there. You can go to audio.
I didn't
audible,
know that.
Audible.com. Yeah, I'm listening to that thing. And he narrates it. Fantastic. And so go out and check it out if you're into this flow stuff. And from what I understand is they went out and surveyed many, many people about flow, about. So they may be quilters, they may be musicians, they may be runners. You can go on in any place where someone can find that passion and flow and interview them and ask about what they experienced. How did they know or what happened to them when they're in flow? And they noticed some trends or some patterns. Mm. And so we have a list of seven things here that these people recognized. And so let's go through them and discuss them and see how it relates to our flow when we're out there on the trail or whatever we're doing.
Okay.
Sound good?
Why did you hit the first one?
Sounds great.
Okay, let's go. And Andy, as a reminder to those that are listening, you've written a couple of articles that are on iRunFar. Scott will link them to the show notes here so that you can click on over and read them. You know, Scott and I thought we were brilliant thinking about this flow stuff and then all of a sudden found it in AJW's archives.
Never mind.
Oh, we can edit it out, Scott.
I was going to say, I list them in the show notes, but then people never even go to the show notes to look at things. They always still email or text us and say, hey, where can I find that video that you guys just talked about? I go, well, the link is in the show notes. So if you don't know how to get to the show notes, just click that little down arrow, and it has all the links that we've talked about, or most of them, at least the ones I remember.
Or text Scott. Okay. Number one, you're completely involved in what you're doing. You're completely focused and concentrated. And since you have me read it, I'll take the first the first swing at this.
Stab away.
You know, I will go out on a training run and consider turning back if I didn't bring my headphones, because I want to listen to the latest, whatever, the podcast or that book I'm in the middle. I just love that one-on-one time with me and that audio file. But I'll go do a long trail run with a bib on, and that's game on. That's time. I'll have that audio program, but I'll never listen to it. I will keep it off for a 24-hour period. There's no need to go there because I'm engaged. I'm involved. I'm concentrating. I'm focused. I don't have time to let my mind drift off what I should be paying attention to is all the biofeedback coming in. How do my legs feel? How do my feet feel? How am I thirsty? Do I need to eat? You know, where's the sun? What's the profile of the course coming up? Do I need to pull back a little bit? Can I extend and stretch a little bit because there's going to be some downhill? I try to stay engaged with all those data points along the way, and there's no room for me to get in the middle of a book.
So are you saying, Don, that you don't practice flow on the training days?
Well, as I was listening to that, I was hoping you weren't going to ask that, because I should probably be practicing flow in training.
And I will throw something at you that contradicts that a little bit. Some of the times when I have sensed this flow, it has been because I'm listening to music.
Okay.
Where I get so involved in either an audiobook or a podcast or some music that I'm listening to, that all of a sudden I look at my watch and I've gone 10 miles and I can't even remember running it.
So, AJW, I know
maybe that's not flow, maybe that's distraction.
I know that AJW is leaning forward right now to get on the mic, and since his video isn't working and we can't see him, we'll just keep talking as if he's not. So
you're absolutely right. I am leaning forward.
I know. Let me just submit this one last thing. But you can use, so I do listen occasionally. I'll throw some music on if I'm in the middle of that long run to help bring me back into some flow, to help move some of those thought processes around. So it's a tool, but it's not a crutch. AJW.
While she didn't use these words, when I spoke with Ellie Greenwood after her course record at Western States in 2012, I got the distinct sense that she spent most of that day in a flow state. She, speaking to her afterwards, she spoke about how quickly it seemed like the race went by, and how her focus and concentration was at once exhilarating and exhausting, and that she was in such a focused place. She was aware that she was in first place and on course record pace, but only because people were telling her that. And she was completely absorbed in the moment because of her focus and her concentration. And as a result, in the aftermath of that experience, it was almost overwhelming to be in her presence and realize what a fully authentic experience she'd just been through.
And you may recall, AJW, when we had spoken with this on this topic about losing ourselves with Ann Trason, do you remember what she said about the race experience, how long she felt it took to get her from Squaw down to Auburn? And just looking back on it and trying to reflect on the day, not from, 5 years past, but that very day, she said it goes by so fast. It's like you blink and it's over. Now that's someone that has found a place of flow.
Absolutely. And every time I've spoken to a successful runner at Western States or at Hard Rock or at Leadville, even in the middle of the race, of the 100-mile race, they might get to mile 55 or 60 or 70. I was, oh my gosh, I'm at the river already? It's happened so quickly.
Do you think you can identify those people that are in flow as they come through an aid station? If you're working an aid station, can you see the blinders, if you will, that are focused on the task at hand?
Oh gosh, I'd like to think that you could, but you'd have to know a lot more about their inner selves. I mean, certainly when you see really, really talented crew and runners at work, I'm thinking, for example, of Christina Bauer and Rob Krar. right? Or Meredith Terranova and Paul Terranova. You see them in aid stations and they're all in flow. You know, wow. It's just, you can just tell. And I think if you were to talk to, you know, Christina and Meredith, perhaps after their runner went through, you might be able to pick their brain a little bit and get a sense of, you know, where they were on that sort of flow continuum. Interesting discussion, or possibly even an interesting study for a future race.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the fact that your whole crew can be in flow, that's mm-hmm. awesome. And then we talk about, you know, who's your pacer? Well, there needs to be, those gears need to match. They've got to fit nicely so that you're both in flow or supporting that, and not have one, you know, out of sync.
I remember Matt Carpenter actually explaining to someone who was interviewing him after his 2005 Leadville course record why he didn't have a pacer. And his point was, he didn't use the word flow directly either, but he didn't want the distraction of another person. He didn't want to have to put any energy towards another individual in that race. I would have to imagine, if we were to ask him now, he ran a 15:42 at Leadville, and he was probably in flow most of the time.
Oh yeah, that's so fast, and things have to be going right to have those days come off like that. So mm-hmm. that's what makes PRs, right? In course records.
Absolutely.
You know, and I have seen, because I know you, Don, so well, I've seen you most recently at the Tahoe 200. I saw you at many different aid stations, and I could tell when you were in the flow and when you weren't.
Hmm.
It's very apparent, but I think it's because I know you.
Hmm.
I don't know whether
You guys, let's go to this number two, because I think it relates. The people that Csikszentmihalyi interviewed, there's a sense of ecstasy and of being outside of everyday reality. Can you think, Don and Scott, of that, and whether in a training run or a race, or having observed other people where that almost ecstatic emotion comes out?
Well, you know, first thing that came to my mind, and I've said it on the podcast before, is that when I'm in that state and I feel like I'm handling things right, I feel like I'm a passenger of my own body, mm-hmm. kind of somewhat removed, a separation between, you know, my mind and what's happening, as if I'm riding a horse or something, mm-hmm. or the captain of a ship. It's just things are good, and so to me that's what number two elicited as I was thinking of a comment.
I remember, as you asked the question, Andy, I remembered a time, this has been years ago, where I went out late one night. You know, things, I was upset about something, and I said, you know what, I need to go for a run. And I went out for a run, and I don't remember how long I was out there. I don't remember where I ran. I do remember going to the cool fire station because I had to refill my bottles. But it was at, like you said, an out-of-body experience where my mind was focused on so many different other things that I don't remember actually running.
Hmm. What does number two bring to you, to your attention, Andy?
You know, I actually went back and revisited Dean Karnazes' story of that evening when he, that's the introduction of his best-selling book, Ultramarathon Man, where he found running. He left his world of corporate world and cocktail parties and just went running, and almost in a Forrest Gump kind of way, just kept going and going and going. And here, you know, 15 years later, he still is. You know, say what you want about Dean, but he's been an inspiration to a generation because he uses running as a vehicle for getting beyond everyday life. And, you know, in this quote from the people who Csikszentmihalyi interviewed, they talk about that it's somehow a departure from the day to day, whether you're a jazz musician or a painter or a runner or a basketball player or a teacher. I mean, I've talked to teachers who get into the flow, frankly, and have had this, you know, and they've come down at lunch and said, geez, I'm sorry I let my class out late, but I was just in a flow, you know, talking about the, you know, Constitution or whatever. I'm sure the kids weren't really feeling like it was flow, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. So I have a question about that.
Yeah.
So do you have to be an expert or a virtuoso to experience flow? So let's take it back to, you know, a jazz musician. Does a jazz musician have to have all of the tools and know-how and the experience to get into the zone and then take that and shift that over to running, can someone that is doesn't have a base or doesn't have, is out there working during these workouts, can they get into a state of flow? Can you be a non-virtuoso beginner and find flow?
Can I find flow playing chopsticks on the piano? Is that what you're saying, Scott?
That's what I'm saying.
Very low talent, haven't really accomplished or practiced much, but can I find that inner joy and satisfaction as I'm playing that simple little tune?
Or does it take the experience to get into the flow?
Well, I think you can find flow at any level. You give yourself permission to and recognize your level, and you enjoy what's happening and realize you have grown and there's a lot of growth ahead of you. And if you can acknowledge your space and give yourself permission to be okay with it, you can enjoy flow anywhere, meaning you can have your long run at 3 miles at a 15-minute mile per pace. Can you enjoy flow? Heck yeah. As Rob Carr flies by you, he's in his own flow.
I didn't notice him. I was flowing.
Yes. and I think I would agree with Don. I think it being absorbed in the experience can happen to anybody at any level. I mean, how many of us have heard of the novelist who, spent 4 days in seclusion writing 4 chapters and then proceeded to toss them all in the fireplace and start over? You know, that 4 days they spent writing, they were probably in flow and they have nothing to show for it but the experience. I think also it's important to know that flow can be at its essence also relational. You can be caught up in the flow with a group of other people. The jazz band is a classic example, but it also could be a group of people sailing a sailboat, where you have to be perfectly in sync, or a group of people attempting to build a house or work on a piece of software. I mean, it's interesting when they dig back into the early years of Microsoft and Paul Allen and Bill Gates, when they got into the University of Washington mainframe and just stayed there, on caffeinated highs for 72 hours, you can bet they were in a flow. But at that point, they were just trying to solve problems that they didn't really even know were problems yet. And when the Beatles, playing for 8-10 hours in a row in these Liverpool bars, just getting into a flow. Now, of course, they became the Beatles. But I think it can come in any walk of life and at any time. And oftentimes the most meaningful flow experiences come maybe when you don't expect them to.
Can I shift the question a little bit and say, are the virtuosos or those that are experienced or skilled at whatever given craft, can they get into the flow more frequently and easier? So I'm just thinking about running. When I have a good base and when I can go out and I don't have to worry about the fitness level, and I can just go out and run for miles and miles without having my heart rate go skyrocketing high and really working hard, I think that I have the tendency to get into flow easier than if I haven't put in the work.
Well, I think like all things in life, when you practice and you do it with some frequency, that's going to come easier.
Yeah, I would agree. Yes, if you're more experienced at it and if you're more highly skilled at it or more fit in the case of running, you've got a better chance of making yourself available to that experience. That being said, I am a firm believer in you can't make flow happen.
Ooh,
flow,
I like that.
Flow happens to you. Now, you can set up the environmental circumstances in which it could happen. You could be fit. You could have the appropriate clothing. You could be set to go. You could have the jazz band set up, right? But not every jazz concert does the group get into flow. When they do, though, there's a certain mystery around it. My one flowiest running experience that you referred to earlier, I had no idea it was going to happen when I stood on that starting line in Squaw. But when it happened, you can better believe I was completely in the moment and there was like nothing else in the world.
Go ahead, DJ.
It was, and I truly felt like, and to this day feel like, that day happened to me. I did not make that day happen.
And so I've been lucky enough, and one, it was 2005, right, AJW? Because
yeah,
it was
yeah.
2005 for me. I was behind you quite a bit. in that race, but I was there. And going through there, I recognized I was in flow. I was like, wow, is this really happening to me right now? Is this really this aid station? Mm-hmm. And is this really reality? It was just fantastic when you're in that moment. It is surreal.
I wonder if the hype of a race can help push you into that flow
state. Absolutely. I've got to think,
yes. The magic of going to your A race or a race that you've been looking forward to for a long time, I think that helps you get into that flow state.
I've got to agree with that.
Oh, I think there's a mystique to that. My favorite, of course, is Western States as a 100 miler. But there's a mystique to some of these environments. The Hard Rock course in recent years, the North Face 50 or Lake Sonoma. Look outside of running and the extraordinary things that happen at places like Fenway Park or Wrigley mm-hmm. Field or Churchill Downs or Augusta National. I mean, there are special places that or Carnegie Hall, for that matter, right? These are the kinds of places that perhaps provide more ample environments for flow to happen than others.
And maybe why some of these races have lotteries because that the hype in the environment is set up that way, and we're all hoping to catch flow. I mean, that's mm-hmm. why we show up. We're showing up for flow. We want that ultimate experience, and we know that if I put myself in that spot, a big A race, one that's really tough to get into, and I don't want to squander this. This might be my one shot in 5 years or 10 years or a running career. This is my shot, and so you're going after there to catch that magic.
I have to believe that's true.
I think of that Eminem song, and I'm sure people are screaming at me right now. It's like One Shot. I don't know what it's called, but it's a great.
Hum a few bars, Scott.
I'm not a rapper.
I'm going to go back to a comment earlier that we made. When you're in flow, how things just happen better or easier, more naturally, or the outcomes are fantastic, and it made me think of 30 Rock. Back to Alec Baldwin, and who was Jack Donaghy. I'm looking this up on the phone. And Tina Fey, as they were talking, who played Liz Lemon. And
I didn't know you watched TV.
I Netflix on my phone.
Okay.
30 Rock is brilliant. And so the episode was as Alec Baldwin was in flow, actually. And he says, hey, Liz Lemon, you want me to solve anything? I'm Reaganing right now. Everything I'm doing is working. Give me a problem, I'll solve it for you, whatever it is. And that's kind of that flow thing. It can extend beyond just running. It can leak and bleed over into other phases of our life.
Ooh, that is a topic we could talk about for a while.
Scotty, I didn't want to interrupt at the time. The moment, the song you're talking about is Lose Yourself.
Lose Yourself, yes.
Right? Which get this, just the opening line. Look, if you had one shot or one opportunity to seize everything you ever wanted in one moment, would you capture it or just let it slip?
Mm. We'll close this podcast with that song, at least a piece of it in the beginning, and then encourage people to go buy it.
You're really hitting. I mean, I know you couldn't get it off the tip of your tongue, but that he in that song gets at the essence of, you know, why people get to squaw in the state that they do, because it is their one shot and it's ripe for the picking when they're there. And I know there's nothing like it.
You know, I want to just, I think it relates. If we move on to point number three,
your turn to read. Go ahead.
Yeah. It says there's a great inner clarity. You know what needs to be done, and you get immediate feedback on how well you're doing.
Mm-hmm. How well you're doing, not how awful. How well you're doing. So things are spinning right.
I think of the analogy that you've said many times on the podcast, Don, where there's all these dials of a cockpit as you're running, and you're looking at each little dial. If you're in the zone, you're able to see that with maybe a broad panoramic vision and see how those things are going, but it's very clear. It's not foggy. You know exactly what each dial is and where it is and what you need to do to fix some of those dials.
And dial means you have control of the situation.
Right.
Yeah, dial means you are the commander.
And I think the key is the second part of that phrase when they talk about you're getting direct and immediate feedback, right? Whether you're that musician who's hitting a home run and just glancing into the audience and seeing that she has them mesmerized, or you're running into the aid station and you see the look on the faces of your crew saying, holy crap, he's killing it right now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know it. You get that feedback, and that fuels even greater feeling of flow.
I remember running into, we're talking about 2005, and because it kind of comes back to my mind of coming into 78, mile 78 down there at Rucky Chuck, that before you do that river crossing, and I surprised some of the people that were at the aid station, like, what are you doing here? Where you catch a ride from somebody. I was just kind of performing out of body experience, and that really made me feel like it's really happening and gave me another boost just seeing other people look at you going, ah, you're in flow.
I we may have to end this podcast early. I'm getting kind of excited. I need to go put my shoes on and go running.
Well, go take a lap around. AJ and I will take care of point number four. Hey, you know, a couple other areas of flow that are out there. I think of comedians. You know, they're up there on stage, yeah. And all of a sudden people are laughing and new material's rolling off their tongue, and it's like, wow, where is this stuff coming from? I've got to imagine the stand-up comic could sit in on this panel and talk about flow and feel just like
or a
close cousin.
Or a surgeon.
A surgeon.
A surgeon, yeah. That is operating gets into a state of flow, I bet. At least I hope so when they're operating on me.
Or how about a sales call or a sales presentation when you know you have the message, heads are starting to nod up and down, and you just have a command of your product or service, and you're excited about how well it's being received. There's a flow.
So I wanted to save this till later in the podcast, but I'm going to throw it out now because we're talking about how this can permeate into other areas of our lives. Do you think with the crazy, fast-paced information society with our cell phones in our hands, not in our pockets, that we are constantly being interrupted by things that could distract us from getting into a flow state? You don't see a musician looking at their phone answering a text.
Maybe it's part of your flow. Maybe that's a component of your day that's part of your flow. I'll just throw that out there.
Could be.
But AJW has a thought.
Yeah, I gotta say, I think it gets in the way. I haven't been subtle on, you know, in my writings of the last 2 years about the ways in which technology has gotten in the way of authentic experience. I think flow experiences, even if they're taken in small doses, are those kinds of things that give us sustenance for a long, long time. I mean, look, Don and I have already bored the audience with stories from 2005. That yeah. that was 11 and a half years ago. But for the two of us, it was like it was yesterday. And we can keep sipping off of that experience for as long as that experience will let us. Now, I want everybody in the world to experience what I experienced that day. It was life-sustaining and life-giving. And it may sound weird to some people, but not a day goes by in my life where there's not some piece of that experience of running Western States in 2005 and achieving a purity of being that came from flow that I don't continue to have with me today. And I think constant interruption, extreme fast-paced life, you know, the distracting noise of modern 21st century life does have the potential. I don't say it always. I'm not going to be a complete naysayer, but does have the potential to both interrupt and potentially stunt the opportunities for those things to happen to us.
Number four.
Yeah, let's go four, Freeman.
Yeah.
You know that the activity is doable, that you have the necessary skills to complete the task successfully. You have to show up with confidence.
Yeah, I was going to say, this kind of falls back to the question I asked earlier. Do you need to be a virtuoso? You don't have to be a virtuoso, but you need to have the confidence that you can perform the task and that it's achievable.
You know, you need to know which end of the violin to put your hand. You've got to have some basics. You've got to know what the black keys and the white keys, how they relate to one another in chopsticks. You can't go white, 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 black. I mean, there's a rhythm.
How important is confidence? Can you go into a training day or a race where you're not confident and achieve flow? This says no.
Wow, that's a great question. AJW?
Let me give a personal anecdote that's just right at the front of my brain because I've talked a lot about this in the last 5 months, and that's my experience at Hard Rock this past year. If I, not to make too much of a, because I've told the story before, but if 2005 was the top of the mountain, you know, at Western States, 2016 that Hard Rock was the peak of the valley. It was just miserable. And it was as early as mile 18, which was the first place my crew saw me, where they saw a different AJW. The AJW they'd seen 31 other times that is confident and possibly even a little bit cocky and arrogant was just not there, and wasn't there for the entire rest of that 42-hour slog. Now, I learned a lot about myself in the process, and I learned about, confidence and lack of confidence and anxiety and pain and suffering and all those other things. But I think it's important to not minimize the importance of the mental and actually having the confidence to do what you are setting out to do. I knew I could run the Hard Rock course because I'd done it before, but whatever happened to me that day made it awfully difficult to do so in any way that even resembled a satisfaction to me.
So we talk about confidence, and I don't think it necessarily needs to be, and I don't think you were saying this, Andy, that the confidence that I can complete this or I can get it done in my cutoff times that I've established for myself. I think it, as Scott, you said that I was in flow at Tahoe 200. I was intimidated by the distance. I had no idea what was going to happen in
unknown.
This multiple day journey. But the confidence that I did have was that I can read my own space and I can have some control over it. I had confidence that I could drive this vehicle. That's the only piece of confidence I had. So I had to rely on that. That was where I put my stock.
And you had confidence you could make it to the next aid station.
I had confidence you'd be there with your car.
That's just fascinating to me, that you have to have that confidence. And I don't know if that, I think that confidence has to be, not faked. It has to be real.
Genuine.
Genuine is the word I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. I don't think that you can fake that confidence.
No.
And obtain that sense of flow. But I like your point on this, that there are many people that may get into a flow state running their first marathon.
Mm-hmm.
That they have never done it, but they have confidence in their training and that they put in that they can make it to mile 3, and once they're at 3, they can make it to 6, and once they make it to 6, and I think that's where you kind of break it up into bite-sized, doable, eatable pieces.
Let's turn that conversation about this confidence and preparation to, I'm losing track of the word, and I was trying to find it, when you're imagery, when mm-hmm. you're laying, not running, but just maybe at night, put your head on the pillow, and you're just rolling through.
Yeah.
How does that build in confidence about
visualization?
Yeah, the visualization piece. Thanks. That's what it was, Scott. Just that. How can that be a flow creator or a flow builder, a foundation for flow? I think there's something there.
That's fuel. Fuel for flow.
Yeah.
Flow
yeah.
fuel.
If
bottle it.
If 90% is mental, right? The other 10% is in our head. There is something to practicing that piece and teaching ourselves what it's supposed to feel like and rehearsing it so it's not the first time you're there.
So if you haven't felt flow before in a race, how can you visualize what that feels like? Is it just imaginary?
AJW.
I think you want to, there are enough people out there who have, you first thing you want to do is talk to them about it. Like, how did it feel? Second of all, how did you create an environment or circumstances to get you there? And then third, what did you do when it happened? I think it's pretty capricious though. You don't know when it's going to, there's people who probably go through life and don't get that, to go back to the golf analogy, right, Don? I've played a ton of golf. I've never gotten a hole in one. My damn father, who I could beat up and down the pike, has gotten 4 holes in one, So, he's probably never had flow in an ultra marathon, but, so I think like I said before, you can't make it happen. You can't make it happen. You can set up the circumstances such that it might, but you can't make it happen. And I think if you've never experienced it before, the best thing you can do is arrive at the starting line ready to go. Hope it's going to happen. And if it does, great. But bet, you know, you can, you know, 85-90% chance it's not. So you're not alone if it doesn't.
Let me put you guys on the spot. So where else in life, what other circumstances have you been in that you have experienced flow, not running? And when was it? Maybe think back to childhood, you know, bring it on through, because you asked the question, Scott, about if you've never experienced flow on a run, how do you know? And it made me start to think, well, how many other times in life have we experienced flow? And then we can perhaps translate that experience over to the trail somehow or out there on the run. So either Scott or Andy, whoever's leaning forward on the mic, what other place have you experienced flow besides
Andy.
Running?
You go first.
Which means Scott's not ready.
I can't choose.
Ah, perfect.
You know, most of the other experiences I've had, and I kind of anticipated that we'd get to this. part of the reason running is so alluring to me is that it is that one place where I've felt more complete as a person than any other aspect of my life. I think if I were to think back to that whole, you know, almost a half of a century of life experiences, the other times I have felt a sense of flow have largely been in more relational settings, working on a project, a collaborative project with a group. We've heard a lot, especially in the last 10, 15 years, you know, of in the technology revolution, of groups of people, whether they be at Google or Facebook or other high-tech firms, who get together and the sum of the parts, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, and they get in a flow and they stay up all night long and they create something brilliant. And while I haven't experienced anything nearly like that, you know, whether it be working with a group of educators or working with a group of fellow parents or working with a group of other like-minded, you know, athletes in organizing a run or a project or a something, I think I've felt it. But it could also be more of just the kind of a collaborative excitement about something rather than a pure feeling of the ego falls away and I'm completely in the moment like I feel on some of those runs.
So I know that I felt this, this flow. I used to ski quite a bit, and I know that there are times in races and stuff that I felt a flow where, anyway, but the one I want to talk about actually relates to this podcast. There are times when Don and I have been out on a run talking about Trail Runner Nation and things that we're trying to do or whatever, and it seems almost effortless. And things come to us, and we it's a, like you were saying, maybe it isn't flow, but it's a collaborative effort, but we're just throwing things at the wall and just getting excited, and new opportunities start popping up, and I have fun in that.
Idea Hill. That's IDEA. Tough. They put those letters together. Very tough.
What are you saying?
Do I have signs of a stroke right now? Because this is not going well.
I don't know what you're talking about.
How's my face look? Both sides equal? So, running up that hill, where we came up with the name Trail Runner Nation. I mean, just that on that run, I was supporting your comments, Scott.
I was trying to validate what you were saying.
That's what I was trying to do.
Thank you.
So flow, as a kid, that's where I first experienced flow. Whether it was hide and seek, whether it was kickball, whether it was whatever, out in front.
Just Mario Brothers.
Even before that, of just being out there and effortlessly not worrying about not a care in the world, just enjoying life. That was that was flow early.
And so let's jump to number five, because it completely ties in, and that's losing your sense of self. I mean, what both of you guys just talked about, Scott, you know, going on these rumination runs about Trail Runner Nation and Don as a kid, you know, when you lose, you know, the only way we experience the world, right, is through our own perspective, through our own self. And yet here's Csikszentmihalyi saying, you know, our most optimal experience comes when we lose that sense of self, when we're so absorbed in the activity that that becomes who we are. I mean, isn't that fascinating?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of difficult to wrap your head around and completely understandable as to why it would be difficult to achieve.
And almost contradictory.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about how ultra running is a very, very selfish sport. It's all about you that day, whether it's a training day or whether it's a race. But when you find yourself and you lose your sense of self and you get past that shadow of yourself, boy, that's deep. I'm going to have to think about that for a minute. Someone else can talk while I'm thinking.
Oh, I thought you were asking for a minute.
No.
Okay, I got it. Very good, Scott. I think that unless you've got another comment on that one, AJW, we may move to the next one.
It's related.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, number six.
You lose track of time and you're completely focused on the present moment.
And I would say that is the point of when you're out there and you're just, what I like to describe is just there's a bubble. You exist, you know, 5 feet in front of you, 5 feet, you know, diameter around you, and you're kind of running in that. And I've had that and experienced that as you guys have when you're running at night. Mm-hmm. Sometimes night running is a bit more focused and concentrated because you can't see that ridge line is up ahead. Dang, I looked at that thing 10 minutes ago and I can't see that I've made a lot of progress. But when you just have this petzel bubble of light around you, if that's what you're running with, and that's what you're in, then I think all of a sudden a lot of things just become present time consciousness and that's it. That's why I like night running.
I think that's maybe an evidence that you are in the flow.
Yeah. It's easier to flow when you remove some of the other the data points that are coming in.
I think it gets back to, you know, what Annie talked about with feeling like the race took 30 minutes. You know, when you're really in that moment, when you're really, there's nothing else in life than what you're doing in that precise time, it's like it becomes temporal needs become irrelevant. You know, you don't need to eat, you don't need to sleep, you don't need to talk, you don't need to, I mean, you really are just completely and totally absorbed. And man, it is ecstasy.
So let's go back to the pacer thing, you know, of not having a pacer. You bring a pacer in, that can be a true flow interrupter. Because if you are in your own space and you're just moving through, which kind of contradicts what you were saying before, Scott, you and I are out on a run. All of a sudden, we're in flow and doing that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But to the point of choosing to race without a pacer, you remove that variable of perhaps, what if this person becomes an anti-flower on me? You know, I want to be in my own space and my own control.
Well, I would say I helped pace someone at the Rio del Lago this year, and although I can't speak for her, I think she got in a flow.
Mm.
There were many, many miles that she was clipping off just great pace and just, you know, having a good time and self-absorbed in her little bubble,
mm-hmm.
to the point where she was surprised when we got to an aid station close to when I was trading off pacing duties. She was surprised how fast we had covered those distances.
So as a pacer, we can recognize when our runner's in a flow,
yeah.
and just stay back enough and be a flow supporter and not try to get in there and entertain them with story or remind them to eat a goo.
Well, I would say that you can have conversation and enjoy each other's company and still be in that flow state.
All right.
It doesn't have to be an internal thing. I think
AJW 2005, the year of the flow for both of us. Did you have a pacer?
I did. At the risk of getting into too much minutia, though, I think it's important for the pacer to, especially in a highly competitive, highly charged environment like Western States or Hard Rock or another really competitive race, to have been around the runner the whole day prior to them picking up their runner. So you should have a sense. You should have a sense that your runner is in that flow long before you pick them up at Forest Hill or the river crossing, let's say, at Western States. I had a pacer in 2005, and I dropped him, and it wasn't. And it wasn't his fault, and it wasn't my fault, and I didn't drop him because I was in a flow state or anything. I was just running way beyond what my planned pace was, and eventually, you know, he started throwing up and wasn't able to continue with me anymore, and I finished on my own. But you know, even having him that day, mostly what I was doing, I ran in front of him the whole time and, you know, basically told him what I was doing. And, you know, he was great, absolutely great at the aid stations, getting in and out of there, doing all the practical things that pacers are so important to do at a highly competitive 100-mile race. But, you know, frankly, by the time I got to Green Gate and had 20 miles to go, I was completely just had the magnetic pull of the finish line. And it was great to have him there it was shortly before Highway 49 that I realized he wasn't back there anymore. I was in such a flow, it took me about 15 minutes to realize I'd dropped him. And so when I got to Highway 49, my crew was like, "Hey, where's John? Where's John?" And I turned around and looked, and he wasn't there. And I said, "Well, I guess he's not here." And I just kept running.
You know, that it brings up a really great discussion of pacer, and it's, we've had pacer podcasts before, but you know, a pacer that's doing the pacer job correctly can really help support you and keep you in a flow. They can make sure that your needs are taken care of in an aid station, so you can focus on what you're doing, which is execution and running and listening to your body. So I think there's a lot of things pacers can do if they're journeyman pacers that can assist a runner in flow. But you've got to, like you said, AJW, you've got to know your runner, have a little history, or just be one heck of a reader. You know, what's this? Has their gait changed? Is there, you know, what's going on with this person?
Well, that goes back to, was it Dominic Grossman we were talking about pacing? And he said, it was Victor Ballesteros, I think, that he said he always follows his runner as a pacer. He's always in back. He's never in front, so that he can read the runner. Yeah, he can let him understand what type of situation they're going through. He says you can't see that if you're in front.
Yeah, that was Victor.
Mm-hmm. It was Victor.
Mm-hmm.
I will say it's really, really important, especially in these highly competitive hundreds, that the pacer and the runner have a real good understanding of one another, that they spend a fair amount of time talking through potential scenarios before the race, and that they're, you know, ready to, they're prepared for anything come race day, including the pacer getting fired. I mean, there should be no emotion on race day. And if that pacer is annoying, by the time you get to mile 90 aid station, you're just like, you know what? Sorry, I'm going to plug in my music. And, you know, it's about the runner, not about the pacer at that time. And no hard feelings. You know, you just got to go.
Yeah, I've picked up runners as a pacer, and I just ask that question. What do you want from your pacer? Do you want conversation? You want me silent? Do you want me in front? You want me in back? I mean, just give me my marching orders, and that's what I'll do. And I do my best as pacer to execute and do that. Not what I think I need, or not what I think they need, but what do you want from me? And then it's as simple as that. If you need a change, let me know. And am I too close, too far? I don't spend too many miles quizzing them on this stuff, because that's not a good pacer either. But I at least get a sense of what role they'd like me to play, because that's what I'll do.
Let's go on to number 7. This is the last point that we want to make. There's an intrinsic motivation. Whatever produces flow becomes its own reward. I love that statement.
Read it again.
Did you not listen?
A couple of the listeners, they were going across the stream, okay. and they lost it.
There's an intrinsic motivation. Whatever produces flow becomes its own reward. So flow is a reward. I like that.
And, you know, it almost gets back to your point, Scott, about whether you have to be well-prepared or have to be elite or have to be anything in order to achieve flow. And I think that the context here is that, no, you don't really. It flow in and of itself is its own reward. And I think it bucks a lot of modern society's focus on extrinsic rewards by saying, you know what, it's the intrinsic value of knowing you had that experience. That's all you need. And you can take that to bed every night, and you can take that out on your next run, and you can take it out to your next trombone rehearsal, and you can take it out to whatever it is that gave you flow that last time. You can take it with you the next time you go searching for it.
And you know, that's what I think keeps and hooks us into this sport, is if you've ever gone out on a training run, or if you've had a race and you've experienced that flow state. Back to the golf analogy, when you finally feel that swing where the swing happens and you don't even feel the club hit the ball, that's what keeps you coming back, and that's what I think is fun about this flow conversation with trail running. I do have a question, and maybe we can go down this. We talked a little bit, but maybe for bullet points is how can we. You know, there's a saying, you take what the day gives you, whether it's a training day or whether it's a race, you take what the day gives you. And we've talked about that flow is something that happens to you. Are there things that we can do to increase the chance of entering into a flow state? And I can think of two things right off that we've already talked about. One is to be in shape, be prepared physically and mentally and put the training in and have confidence in your training. I think the second one Don alluded to is this whole visualization thing where you picture yourself doing everything right. And I think those are two things that can maybe help increase the chance of lightning hitting. What do you think, HAW?
The third one I'd put is you have to clear your mind. You know, whether you're going to be out there for 4 hours or 40 hours, you've got to clear your mind of clutter. And that could be clutter from your job, clutter from your relationships, clutter from other things in your life. And if you clear that mind, it opens up some space in the context of the physical activity and the opportunity to just be selfish for a day for, you know, extraordinary things to happen.
I will add this comment that flow doesn't happen on an Excel spreadsheet. You cannot plug in flow, and you cannot let an Excel spreadsheet dictate whether you're happy with that day or you're executing it well. You really have to look at what's happening at that moment, how you feel and what's going on, that you can't design it. You just, to your point, what the day gives you, where you're at, where you're standing at that moment, you have to be satisfied with it and not beat yourself up because you didn't hit that cell that said you're supposed to be at that particular aid station at that particular time. You've got to let that stuff go because you can never get into flow if you're walking around with a gray cloud over your head kicking up dust. There's no flow there. Flow has to happen when you're genuinely pleased, content, happy, and executing. And that doesn't happen on a Excel program.
Although preparation, I think, is key. You know, if you take this into, you know, times when I felt flow professionally, mm-hmm. it's because I've done my homework. I know the people I'm meeting with. I know what their motivation is. I know the products that I'm talking about very, very well. So the preparation is really important. You can't be a lazy person or a lazy runner and feel flow.
Yeah, I agree.
And in this day and age with so much emphasis on science and data, I have to say too, you can't hire a coach that'll make you more likely to get flow. You can't read an article on iRunFar that's more than likely to get you flow. You can't listen to a podcast on Trail Runner Nation that's going to get you more likely to get flow. At the end of the day, you're simply going to go into an environment where you are going to be as well prepared as you can be as excited as you can be as open as you can be as clear of mind and body and, dare I say, soul as you can be, And then and only then hope it ends up happening.
Go ahead.
And then when it does happen, you bottle it up and hope that it lasts you for the rest of your life.
Yes. And flow is a vulnerable moment. I mean, it's fleeting, and you have to expose yourself to risk and potential consequences and be open to it. I think that it's a wonderful place, but it's a risky place. I don't even know what that means. And I'm not even sure if you played it back and listened to it. If you used all the same letters I used and made new words, I don't even think you at that point could make anything that made sense. So, but there's something there that it is a gift. It's a gift from the trail gods, if we're on the trail, that allow us to experience this, that brings us back for more. So,
absolutely.
Hey, absolutely. AJW, you've written a couple articles on it, and I would encourage people to go out and read those. Absolutely, at I Run Far, and you're writing a book. Do you anticipate a chapter on flow?
So
now there is.
Put him on the spot that, Freeman.
I'm working with a very, very important person in my life who herself is a 3-time best-selling author and is my editor and is pretty intense, and that's my mom. Joan Anderson, for listeners out there, her name is Joan Anderson, and her 2002 memoir, A Year by the Sea, was number one on the New York Times bestseller list and landed her on Oprah and all this other stuff. So she has some connections in the publishing world and has been pounding on me to write a book for about 10 years. And I'm working on it now. There are not chapters in this book, Don. They're sections. Oh, okay. And there is one section on flow. But it's also part of a larger theme around topics you just mentioned, vulnerability and patience. Those are parts of my life and parts of my running life, and I think parts of the runner's life that have need to be explored a little bit more deeply, and as part of what I'm doing in the book.
Guys, I think that's one of the things that I just love so much about trail running is there's joy and ecstasy, there's consequences, there's pain. I mean, it is real. There isn't anything that's artificial like Mario Brothers that we talked about earlier. I mean, there is nothing closer than real life, living to the fullest, full on, full tilt, as when you wrap yourself and engage yourself in the sport of trail running and ultra running. It is a wonderful expression of life and living.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think it translates into other points, parts of your life.
You get better at this, yep, at trail running. You get better at every other phase. If that's what you were saying.
That's what I was trying to say.
Except I interrupted you.
No, that was fine.
Sorry.
I was not in the flow,
really,
and you helped me.
I'm completely biased on this, but I don't think there's very much that's taught me more about being a good person, however you define good person, than being a runner. And that's nothing to shake a stick at.
For any of you that may have been in the service, I will speak to the military and the drills that we did out there on the parade deck of marching with your complete unit. If there isn't a more finer example of flow, of listening to the cadence of the boots strike, bang, bang, and then a slight turn, and you hear the boots as they torque on that pavement. Shh, bang. Mm-hmm. It is a mind-blowing experience to be part of that unit moving through with that precision and accuracy and listening to the rhythm. It will raise hair on your arms just to be in that.
So is rhythm a component of flow?
Oh, absolutely. We mentioned that earlier.
No doubt about it. Yeah.
Yes, rhythm. And remember Phil Maffetone's podcast on rhythm. You should link that, Scott, since it's easy for me to say and difficult for you to do in the show notes, that rhythm is a very, very important part of flow.
You know, I was going to say what just came to my mind is Caballo Blanco.
Uh-huh. Yes.
In Born to Run
how he was teaching Chris how to run, and he came up with three words, and that is easy, light, smooth, and then you become fast. And that's how he defined flow. Get into, and maybe this is another checklist if you're trying to increase that elusive flow component to come upon you, is get into an easy, light, smooth rhythm, and then maybe lightning can strike.
Yeah, it's never hard when you're in flow. It needs to be easy, smooth, and light. It's never a lot of
it's never not a lot of work.
When you AJW, let's close this out. Close this out.
Final thoughts from AJW.
Yeah.
Well, I think what I take away from this discussion is reaffirmation that flow, as Csikszentmihalyi's research has, you know, strongly indicated, is something that makes our lives better. It's elusive. It can at times be frustrating in a search for it, but it also can change our lives and can give us life experiences that are dramatic, that are memorable, and that change us at our very essence. And I think if that's something that this daily endeavor of lacing up our shoes, especially this time of year in the pre-dawn dark, to get out and pound out a couple of miles, listening to a Trail Runner Nation podcast, then we've achieved something. And I think I like this. I like this notion that no matter who you are, no matter what walk of life, no matter how you found yourself into this crazy band of people we call trail runners, you're all welcome here, and we're all seeking the same thing, whether we're going to try to get from Squaw to Auburn in 14 and a half hours or just before 30 hours, or whether we never care to go to Western States or even run a race, but would rather just get out there and enjoy time with our friends on the trails. I think having this aspirational goal of sometime finding that way to get outside of ourselves and have a transcendent experience is going to ultimately make us all better runners and better people.
Andy Jones Wilkins, that was well stated, and appreciate your input and nudging us to get into this flow.
I'm excited. I'm motivated to go run and find this elusive piece of lightning in a bottle.
So go out and flow.
Mass.
Varies depending on your circumstances.
Yeah, and I do think it's important to know. I mean, I heard you on the notion of can you kind of come back and forth on flow. And I think Csikszentmihalyi, he's a professor and it's research-based and stuff. I mean, I think when you really think about it, yeah, there's probably times you can come in and out of flow and you'd be okay, you know. And I'd be curious about the feedback on this, because it's a little different direction for Trail Runner Nation, but it's also, I think, something that's going to resonate with people.
No, I think this is the exact direction for Trail Runner Nation. As you pointed out earlier, AJW, a week or so back, that it's very important for us to expand the topics and discussion to areas outside of, you know, heel strike and you know, how many goos per hour on a hot day. You know, it's important to get on the philosophical side of this stuff.
Well, and I think what people are doing, you guys would know this better than me, but, you know, people are getting out on a, you know, a relaxed run and they're like, oh, it's my Tuesday morning. This is when I listen to the podcast, and they're listening to it and they're taking it in and they're thinking about it. And I think that's we ought to, and I know you guys are doing this, you know, take a certain responsibility for that, because it's good stuff. And you can control, to the extent that we're controlling anything in this crazy world these days, right? You can a little bit control the narrative. You know, part of what I was thinking about, just in the, you know, as the lotteries are finishing and everyone's pissed off about they didn't get into this, Hard Rock's getting sued or whatever, you know, here's these guys, you know, a couple weeks before Christmas talking about flow. And, you know, I think that's cool.
Hey, so how soon
What's the soonest you've ever been able to enter into flow? Does it? It takes miles or hours to get in, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was a couple times ago we were, Don, you were talking about, when a run's going to be good, a couple strides down the trail.
Yeah.
But there's a difference, you know, this one Travis was on, right? There's a difference between when a run's going to be good and when a run is going to get you into this transcendent state where your ego drops away and all that stuff.
I could tell you what mile that is for me when I've hit that threshold, when I say here I am again at that same spot. It's around the 40-mile mark. I mean, when I've traveled
that far in.
Well,
wow,
that's when I have the ecstasy part. When I know that I've come across a lot of the challenges and that I'm the commander that day. That I'm in charge of my destiny at that point. And I'm at mile 40 of the 100 distance, and I, you know what, this is going well. I can do this. This is opening up and working like I'd hoped.
So, but is that why you like the longer distances rather than a 50K?
Because I'm slow is why I like the long distance. I'm hoping Candace gets more of a 300 or 500 mile race coming up because I'm really getting slow.
No, I agree with Don there. Although my biggest flow time, it hit early, like mile 15 or 16, and yeah, lasted the whole time, but I think it's also environmental, and that point the guys made in 5 or 6 about feedback. I mean, I started in my various Western States exploits, I started feeling it when I started passing people. Right, you get the feedback that you're beating people, and that they started out too fast, and you're just cruising along, and you're not even tired yet. You know, that definitely fuels the engine.
So I'm with you, AJW. I've felt some flowing at 15, but it's at 40 when I know that now I'm in control. At 15, yeah, it still might be early and fresh, and I might be, you know, sabotaging myself and not even knowing it yet. But at 40, it's like, okay, all of those self-sabotage things, I've passed them on the trail. I've passed those, and so now it's about executing the rest of the day and just staying here. I've talked about that before about being on that fine line, that mm-hmm. thread of that envelope of if I go any faster then I'm going to fall apart. And so I always want to be honest with myself. Is this a pace I can keep for the rest of the day? Not just for 2 hours. Can I keep this pace until tomorrow? And that's and so being honest with yourself of your fitness level. And that's what's cool, because you can have different levels of fitness, so you just have to dial in and still be honest with yourself of, this may have been me 3 years ago or, you know, 3 months ago, but not right now. I need to do this. And you have to have real honesty to hit flow and to be happy.
So on the other side of the boat, I want to then plant the seed of a future podcast topic, because you got it at the, you started in on it at the end of this one, and that's vulnerability. I have no one's written a book about it. There's no tipping point or flow book about vulnerability, but I wrote a thing about it a couple weeks ago on I Run Far, and Powell told me that it got retweeted and sent to way more people, like across the spectrum, not just runners, because of this notion of being, we live in a world where a lot of us are fearful of stuff, and especially fearful of making ourselves vulnerable. And I mean, Don, you said it right there, you know, when you ran a 200 mile race, you were scared of the distance. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that the thread went from Scott talking about confidence to me talking about Hard Rock and not being confident to you talking about the importance of making yourself vulnerable. But I can tell you right now, just from the feedback I got from that column, there are a lot of people who can relate to that thing, that feeling of inadequacy, of poor self-esteem, of I suck and everyone else is great, of, you know, and knowing that they're not alone and that making yourself vulnerable can ultimately make yourself better, I think could get some traction maybe in a future podcast.
Absolutely. Let's start thinking about vulnerability. Yeah. And I need to read that article. I hadn't seen that one. Mm-mm. AJW. So let me look at that and try to steal as much as I can from your own.
We can send Scott out to visit with the deer and try to run the way water goes.
I'm glad you said that. You know, you have to be vulnerable on these podcasts too. You have to take risks and say things that might come across as like you're in a stroke.
Because there's a lot more people who can do a lot better job, right?
I'm sure of that. AJ, we're recording all of this as Scott had asked that question.
This is like Ferris Bueller, you know, the movie. Don wouldn't know because he doesn't see movies. But at the end of Ferris Bueller, it ends. And then there's the bonus material at the end. That's what this is.
Yeah.
I saw you go over and click the mouse again. I was like, oh, crap. So anyway, it's called Becoming Vulnerable. It was posted on November 25th. So you should definitely check. It's sort of my like reflection 4 months later after Hard Rock. But it was, you know, it's just something that I've been thinking a lot about lately, maybe middle age or whatever. But I think it's something worth, you know, pursuing later down the road to use Scott's great phrase. We might want to crawl down that rabbit trail sometime.
All right. A vulnerability. That's the next one. We'll get on that. So go out and flow.
Moss.
Moss.